Welcome on into the Internals show, episode 30, 31, I believe, episode 31, I think. It is Saturday. I'm just going to record them whenever I have a spare moment now. Saturday, March 23rd, I'm on campus right now. I'm in the Frost School of Music library, in a study room, so I don't know if I'm supposed to, like, talking these or not, but I think it's fine. I don't see any reason why it wouldn't be fine. It's like a room. Anyway, it is March, you know. And second round games are happening right now. I'm watching Arizona and Dayton right now. There's 16 seconds left of the game. Arizona's going to win. We'll get into all the games, or at least touch briefly on the ones that were interesting from the first round. I was able to watch basically all the games on Thursday on some level, whether it's a little bit at work or here and there in the car or actually sitting down. I have a singing recital coming up where I just sing for an hour, just me. I have to, like, write about each song in what are called program notes, so that's, like, low-key a massive grind. It was, like, a 14-page document, and I did it, like, all on Thursday, just while I was watching the games, so wasn't maybe completely locked in, because I was obviously, like, doing homework during it, but I was able to watch all the games on Thursday, essentially. Not as many of the games on Friday, because I had classes, and then Goose Rachel's birthday party, so popped in here and there. I was looking at what was happening, but wasn't able to watch all of them. Road to the Final Loon is going to be back in podcast form this year. This is Road to the Final Loon 3.0, I believe, version 3. So yeah, we'll go over all the brackets. One round in the books, see who's looking good, see who's not looking good. And then we'll do the usual, a lot of college basketball this week, obviously it's that time of the year. Not usually a lot of college basketball on this program, but we'll do the usual Wolves talk. Good week for the Wolves, good week and a half, I suppose, since I last recorded. A couple injuries in the Twins. Spring training that we're gonna go over a little bit. So, but yeah, I don't actually know if I have a post game. I might think of one by the end of the pod. Let's get cooking. Arizona just won, by the way. Starting with just an overview, kind of the NCAA tournament so far. I feel like it's a little bit tame, which, you know, for me as somebody who picks, I'm a pretty chalky bracket picker, just because that's my strategy. You know, I'll get into it later when I talk about my bracket. It's a pretty tame tournament so far, nothing too crazy. A couple 14s over a 3, including, like, kind of the death of Coach Calipari in Kentucky, potentially. But no 15s over 2s, no 16 seeds winning. Games started out Thursday, Michigan State, Mississippi State. If you picked Michigan State, really fun game, because they completely dominated. It was not a very good game. I haven't watched a lot of Mississippi State, probably haven't watched them at all year. They did not look like a very proficient basketball team. Duquesne beat BYU in the second game of the day. And I was a little bit invested in BYU just because I think I had them going to the Sweet 16, so I had them winning two games, including beating whoever they're facing in the second, would have faced in the second round. By the way, they completely ruined. I'm trying to work off the
ESPN Tournament Challenge app, so I look at my bracket. I feel like they kind of ruined the app. Like, it used to be actually so easy to see, like, each game, who in your bracket group picked what person or picked what team in that matchup and how far they had them going. So if I'm sitting in the Loon HQ bracket group, which is where we do Road to the Final Loon through, and I could be watching the Auburn game, and I'm watching the Auburn game, and I see, now it shows you that, like, everybody picked Auburn, but it doesn't show you that a lot of the Loons had them going to the Final Four, and I only had them losing losing to San Diego State in the round of 32. It doesn't show you that anymore. They just took that out. Also, the, like, viewing your own bracket is way more clunky. There's, like, ads in the app now, and, like, only, like, half the screen is showing because it's just a worse app than it was last year, which is crazy because, like, they could have just not changed it and it would have been the exact same. Anyway, that's enough of that. I had BYU beating Illinois in the second round because I watched BYU a few times this year, and they're the type of team that you kind of can get either side of things. You can get a team that's really bad if they're shooting badly, or you can get a team that can beat kind of anybody if they're making their shots. And so I thought Duquesne is not a good team. People saying they shouldn't even be an 11 seed, they should be a 12 seed, that they wouldn't have gotten the tournament without winning the A-10. People are saying that stuff. You look at the line, it's like 9 points. You're like, all right, I feel a bit like BYU's safe to win this game. And then I like them, you know, at the chance of getting really hot against an Illinois team and going to Sweet 16. So I had that happen. watched that game, very frustrated. They can't defend anybody. There was, I think, the game clinching basket potentially was scored by like a small guard who got around his defender. And then just the paint was wide open. Like, nobody moved. Nobody helped. Like, BYU's big guy, who was kind of sick on the offensive end, just, like, is sitting under the basket, confused, as if, like, he never expected a guy to drive towards the hoop. Just, like, the help defense was as much as 2 seconds too late. Like, it was incredible. Like, I'm sitting there, like, all right. Like, pretty invested, right, in this game going well. And getting pretty angry at them just not being able to put it away. But anyway, I'm like, the last possession from Duquesne, or like sort of the one that everything hinged on, I was like, all right, we really need to stop here. I was like, okay, he got by the guy. Help defense is surely going to come. Just never came. Easy lay-in to basically win the clinch the game. I said in the Loon chat that I could probably score 15 against BYU. That's obviously not true. Got cooked for that, but, you know, whatever. Creighton beat Akron. It was close for a bit, but they took care of business ultimately. A lot of these teams that are less talented, they come out guns blazing because there's nothing to lose. They have no nerves because they're not expected to win, but then can't hold on because, you know, they're just not as good of a team. Similar for Arizona, just a little bit more extreme. Long Beach State hung around for a while, but they were never winning that game. Ended up losing by 20. North Carolina beat Wagner by 62. This is not interesting. I'm going chronologically, right, by the way, right now. I'm not going in any kind of quadrant. But maybe I should go quadrant to quadrant. I don't know. Whatever. Who cares? There's a moment there Thursday where after the Michigan State game ended, and honestly, if you didn't pick Michigan State or if you weren't that invested in it, every game was kind of shitty. Or maybe after the Duquesne game ended, every game was kind of shitty. Where Creighton was always going to beat Akron, Arizona-Long Beach State was not a close game. North Carolina-Wagner was not a close game. Like, it's just, there's an hour and a half kind of lull in there where we're like, okay, well, this isn't really that interesting. But then Morehead State gave Illinois a bit of a challenge. Which kind of confirmed my thought that Illinois is a little bit vulnerable, but then Illinois did the thing they do where they just score like 20 points in like a minute. and took care of business from there. Oregon was the first of, did all the 11 seeds win? Or did I make that up? At least three of them did. No. Not all of them. Three of them did. New Mexico lost. All the other ones won. Or I guess Duquesne was the first. But Oregon, another 11 seed to beat South Carolina. Very popular upset pick, and they're kind of on fire right now after winning the Pac-12. Every Pac-12 team won in the first round. So, shout out to the Pac-12. They're dead now. So, that included Washington State and Colorado and probably another one or two. I guess Arizona, obviously, but they were not a surprise there. The Nevada-Dayton game. So, I picked Dayton, right? And I'm watching the game, and Dayton's getting – they're getting killed. They're getting killed. It's just not close. And they were playing like such little pussies that I like was so annoyed. Cause again, I'm playing that at like number 13 on Dayton. And I know they like won the game. Right. So I'm saying this all to lead at the point where I was very surprised when they came back. Number 13 on Dayton, the like white big guy, is like one of the softest players I've ever seen in my entire life. It's never a good sign when you're like, get the ball like just straight up, like you get a rebound and then the guy just like straight up rips it out of your hands. Like that, like I used to do that when I was like in eighth grade and I was like weak as shit and playing on the B team. Like that's, you can't have that. And I was so disgusted by like them just playing so soft that I turned the game off and just went home. Because I had been at school getting some stuff done while I was doing the homework, you know. And so I was like, oh, I'm going to go home, get some dinner or whatever. And then eventually they just won the game. I didn't watch the end of the game. So I guess Nevada just kind of pissed down their leg. But they just killed them in the second half in a way that I did not see coming from the way that they were playing. Anyway, Colorado State lost to Texas, put up only 44 points. It's pretty embarrassing. Texas only managed 56. But one of the – obviously the Virginia game on Wednesday, I guess, or Tuesday it was, where they only put up 42 to Colorado State is – like the embarrassment of the tournament, perhaps, but then Colorado State just did the exact same thing, scoring 11 in the first half and then 44 total. Pretty tough. Neither of those teams should have been in the tournament, people are saying, and people are probably right about that. All right, here we get to Oakland, Kentucky. So just like the Dayton game, I picked Kentucky, right? And I have Kentucky going to the Final Four. I was so, like, I was real life angry about this game. There's a lot of games where like, oh, I really wish I would have gotten that one right. I was real life angry about this because Kentucky is, like, all-time just really stupid basketball, like, fouling three-point shooters. Like, with 2 minutes left, like, in the game, they fouled a three-point shooter. Fouled a shooter on a three-point shot. I understand that he was 10 for 20 from three. I get it. But that, you know, you don't send him to the line then. Fouled a three-point shooter. Pulled up a, like, logo three early in the shot clock when you're down, like, four. Just, like, no reason for it. Passed the ball directly to the opponent. And it was, like, all of this, and then there was, like, some really sick shot-making on offense to keep them in it, but then they kept just turning. They would have a great possession, or not even a great possession, but, like, an NBA-level shot from, like, Dillingham or the other guy that – or Reeves, I guess his name is. Reed Shepard was shitty. They'd have, like, just incredible offensive basketball to, like, create a shot and make a shot. And then the next possession, they'd just, like – dribble into a double team and turn it over. Like, he was just so frustrating because clearly they're so talented, and the reason you fall for a team like that and you put them in the Final Four is because they are so talented. I look at the team, and again, I don't follow college basketball closely by any means, but I look at the team, I see two top 10 picks, both of which are really good at scoring and shooting the basketball. And in March, you want, and both are, you know, guard wing types. And in March, like, that's what you need to win. Maybe you want experienced guards, but you really need guys that can score the basketball to keep you out of these sort of like scoreless streaks. And so I was like, I like that. This team is a classic Cal team, and those teams were successful, blah, blah, blah. That's the storyline you fall for. And then they played so maddeningly inconsistent and just really shitty, even though they're clearly a better team. Like, it was an all-time, like, leaky butthole moment for, like, 10 straight minutes in that game. And it just, you kept expecting them to be, all right, they're the better team, they're going to turn it around. Except that Golkey guy, whatever his name is, I think that was his name. Like, I was like, all right, this is, you know, he's having a little bit of a thing right now. The first one he misses, he's gonna cool off. And then he shot like a heat check, falling away three, contested and missed. And I was like, all right, it's over for him. Nope, he makes the next one. And then he gets fouled on a three-point shot and goes to the line and he's still killing us. I was real life mad at that. I think a lot of people who know more about college basketball than me are saying that Calipari is kind of done, or they ought to be done, because this has now happened more often than it hasn't. Sort of embarrassing losses like this in March has sort of been more of Kentucky basketball the past 5 years than any kind of success has been. So I just think, like, the Kentucky fan that I was for that game, for those 2 hours, I'm very, very excited to see him go. Because I think, like, all the recruiting thing aside, and, like, he became what he was because he turned dudes into the NBA, he recruited like crazy, and then he sits at draft night and is like, oh, Kentucky's so great, we got five people drafting the top 15, blah, blah, blah. Like, that's what he does, right? And, like, he's great at that more than anybody has been in basketball history or ever will be. I don't think he knows how to, like, coach a game. Like, there's not one thing I think about when I see Coach Calipari and I'm like, this is one thing he's really good at, of, like, in-game basketball. And it was so clear for most of this game that, like, they just needed to calm the fuck down. And he either, like, didn't want to do that or wasn't capable of getting them to do that. And then after the game, he's like, yeah, the freshmen played badly. I was like, well, okay. Those guys are going to, like, be starting on the Spurs next year, like, that type of shit. One of them might be. Probably not quite that high of picks. Those guys are going to be starting on the Hornets next year. You know? Like, these are pro basketball players, essentially, that you can't, like, if you're blaming them for losing the game for you, like, it's your fault that you couldn't get them there. Like, the guy that killed you is never going to play basketball professionally in his life, maybe. I guess he could play in Latvia or something, just bang threes. That'd be kind of sick. Got to wonder about, you know, his family life, whether he'd like to take that trip, you know. Take that leap to stay in Europe for most of his life. But, like, he's not getting a G League contract, you know? Like, and these other guys are walking into a rotation in the NBA next year. And it's just, like, it's your fault that they play bad. Anyway, And the thing is, like, I don't know why I keep doing it. I've done this thing with Kentucky a couple times the past few years where every time they're actually a decent 2-3 seed, I'm like, I think, you know what it was? I think there was the 8 seed team with Julius Randle where they were just all of a sudden the best recruiting class in the nation, really put it together, and then they made the Final Four and nobody saw it coming because Kentucky wasn't that bad. But in every single game, they were the more talented team because they had Julius Randle. And I'm forgetting some of the other guys that were on that team, but maybe Malik Monk around that time. That feels right. I think it was before Shea, but Malik Monk, Julius Randle. I think that might have been right. Anyway, that team was like an 8 seed. They made the Final Four, and I was like, I should have seen this coming. They're the best, most talented team. So I'm sitting here. I'm like, all right, the most talented in college basketball is arguably on the Kentucky Wildcats. If they put it together, nobody should be able to beat them, in theory, right? And that's why I think I fall for it every time. But over the past 5 years, they've done this so many times. Or they win one game, and then they lose in the second round. And you can't just keep picking them for the Final Four like I do. Anyway, moving on. Coach Cal out for me. Iowa State took care of business, South Dakota State. Nothing of note here. Gonzaga beat McNeese. I feel very proud that I didn't fall for the McNeese thing. As I'll go into on my bracket, if every, like, upsets winning or going deep are relatively random. The reason that they're random and surprising and interesting is because nobody sort of saw them coming. So to, like, try to turn a team into a Cinderella before they've played a game, which is what was happening with McNeese. I've seen a guy, I'm in a bracket pool with a guy who has McNeese in the Elite Eight. And it's just like, you don't, like, based on what are you deciding to do that? They've won a bunch of games this year, but they haven't played anybody. They haven't played anybody. And it seemed like everybody was trying to turn McNeese into this, like, Sweet 16 team so easily. And it's just like, for me, when that type of thing is happening to a team, it's so easy for me to have them lose in the first round. And just because, like, it seems like the teams that everybody thinks are the big upset story are not going to do it. Like, that is so often not the case. And also, like, 6-11 upsets, 5-12 upsets, and anything deeper than that, you have to be looking at the team they're playing. If McNeese was playing a Kansas without one of their best players, like, maybe, and Samford almost made that happen. But they're playing Gonzaga, and Gonzaga hasn't ever lost in the first round, it seems. They're one of the most solid, stable, upset sort of free teams of the last 10 years. And I know there was some, you know, times where they were number one overall seed and they didn't make the Final Four or whatever, but they don't lose in the first round to McNeese. They don't do that. And was very happy when they killed McNeese. And, you know, it's just a good to dodge a bullet when I, like, that got a decent amount of people, it seems. Tennessee beat St. Peter's. The game was probably over in 5 minutes. NC State beat Texas Tech. I had Texas Tech in this game, which is one that had changed. I'd initially picked NC State because they felt hot, and then I heard some people saying that, like, conference tournament champions don't usually do very well, and I was like, all right, maybe not. I've only seen NC State games from the past 2 weeks conference tournament until the first round of this tournament. So I didn't watch them all year. Based on what I've seen from them, it's like, how did they ever lose? If they get officiated the way they get officiated, where, like, the fat guy, DJ Burns, can just, like, kind of commit an offensive foul every time. And then, like, he's really good around the rim. So I'm not trying to take anything away from him saying, like, he just fouls people. But because there's some shots he makes, some, like, little hooks, all the post moves. Like, his bag is pretty deep. So respect to him, but, like, you could just take a charge every time. You could flop every time and get a charge. And maybe it just felt like there was a lot of physicality going on. And they had a bunch of offensive fouls as it was, and I feel like they could have called maybe twice as many. But if that happens, it's hard to beat that team. And I don't know anything about their guards, but they played pretty well. Maybe Texas Tech isn't very good. But you generally trust the Big 12 over the ACC, like this year especially, but obviously didn't happen. That's a game that I wasn't that upset losing because that guy's kind of awesome, not going to lie. But yeah, Drake, another popular upset pick facing Washington State. This one I did fall for. I think it was just because Drake was favored in the game. I was like, it's not really an upset. They're just the better team. They were close. I mean, it wasn't. They probably like. I'm speechless. Drake is maybe speechless. College basketball isn't divided into four quarters. But if it was, they would have lost the fourth quarter by like 20 points. I mean, they had at some point a huge lead. I'm trying to look up, find the actual number for it. And then they just like textbook choke it away. Let me see. I'm not finding it. But they were very much in this game the whole time. Had a pretty good grasp on it and then just pissed it away. It was crazy. And that's exactly what they did last year against the Miami Hurricanes. So Miami Hurricanes, where I am right now, made the Final Four after beating Drake in that fashion. So look for Washington State to do the same. Probably not. But yeah, that was a frustrating one because I did kind of fall for it. And I don't even know if I fell for it. Because they were, again, favored, I think. But I was also just like, remember how to score the – I'm sitting there watching the TV, just like, remember how to score the basketball. Like, whatever you just did for three quarters of this game, just do it for two more minutes, and then you'll win the game. And they just like, nah, I don't want to. Like, we're going to lose, actually. Samford, Kansas. I just realized we're halfway through the games. there's a whole bunch of slate game on Friday that we have to talk about too. Probably should speed this up. Samford, Kansas. Samford got robbed. Kansas looked very vulnerable. Hunter Dickinson looks way worse than I remember for some reason. I just don't feel like I trust him when he has the ball in his hands. So they're about to play against Gonzaga, like literally right now. By the time this pod comes out, that game may be over, and we'll know what happened. But really feel good about Gonzaga in this game just because I feel like Kansas is not great. Also, this guy on Kansas, the Australian guy, Furphy, he looks like the biggest little bitch of all time, or maybe like the littlest little bitch of all time. He looks like he's 12 years old. He just looks way too much like a young Case Postema to like be a successful Division I basketball player. And I mean that with the most love and respect for myself. But like, it's just, I don't want to be betting on a guy or on a team that has a guy that looks like that on it. I just don't. And he might be nasty. I have no idea. But he just looks like a loser. And like, he'd get shoved in lockers. And so I'm kind of out on him. Friday's games. Again, I didn't watch these as much. So I'll probably just touch the notable ones. Big story, obviously, from this day is Yale beating Auburn. The SEC has had a bad tournament with Kentucky and Auburn losing sort of their two flag holders. Florida also lost, like, moments later. Texas A&M did beat Nebraska, so we're good there. Alabama just, like, barely took care of business against Charleston. But yeah, that was probably the most notable result of the second day. Another 11 over a 6, a 12 over 5 in James Madison and Wisconsin. Wisconsin just can't seem to like. Some teams, if they're not shooting well, just can't really do anything. And those are the teams you want to kind of shy away from at BYU, but I kind of picked them, so not credit to me for that. And that just kind of happened to Wisconsin. James Madison is a team that has won a lot of games this year and should be pretty good. Yeah, I guess other three games. Northwestern beat FAU. FAU had this in control, it seemed, until like the very, very end. And then it went to overtime. They got kind of boat raced in overtime, which is unfortunate because I picked them. Baylor took care of business against Colgate. Felt like, you know, I felt like we were missing the buzz from Colgate this year. I feel like the last 2, 3, 4 years, Colgate's been like
Colgate's been like this year's McNeese State. Like, everybody's just, like, actually, I think Colgate's going to win this game. And, like, for no reason. Like, why do we think that? And they never do. And so, felt like that didn't happen. We kind of learned our lesson from Colgate, and we just fell for McNeese State and Morehead State instead. San Diego State beat UAB. This is huge for the program because I have San Diego State probably in the Elite Eight, I think. No, I don't. I have them losing to the one seed. Anyway, this was a close one, and I didn't watch it, but San Diego State won. Marquette was down, like, a significant amount to Western Kentucky at some point, but came back. They were down 43-36 at half, and then won the second half 51-26, so they were a point away from doubling their score in the second half and put up 51 and a half in college basketball, which is pretty fucking crazy. But yeah, the lead was relatively substantial at halftime. And then it like was very short lived after that, and Marquette ended up running away with it. Sometimes it just takes a team a half to get into the tournament, and it doesn't really necessarily mean anything. Like, I don't trust Marquette less moving forward than I did before. But, you know, sometimes it just takes a little bit to get into the tournament. Clemson beat New Mexico. This was a big... New Mexico should have won this game, or a lot of people were saying they would have. Because Clemson, like, hasn't been playing well. New Mexico was on a roll. And then that just didn't happen. And, you know, I picked it wrong, and I think a lot of other people picked it wrong, and it just was what it was. But just was never close. New Mexico didn't really start the game. They, like, halfway through the first quarter, it was a pretty sizable margin. Like, as much as, like, 20 points halfway through the first quarter. And it never really got closer, and they ended up losing by 21. So, Clemson kind of carrying the flag for the ACC right now. Obviously, UNC is who they are. But, and Duke had a good game against Vermont, too. So, I guess I'm shitting on the ACC. But yeah. Colorado beat Florida in an absolute thriller. 102-100. Was close kind of most of the way, and then Colorado took a bit of a lead at the end, and kind of seemed like then they would then choke it away, but fun game winning shot, little baseline midi, rattles around the rim 3 times and falls. I was watching that in my car. Having picked Colorado, was fist pumping in traffic, trying not to get an accident for that, but, you know, feels good. I'm not an upset guy, right? I don't pick a lot of them, because usually they might happen, and, like, I just think that if you try to be the upset guy, you'll pick the upsets, and then you'll pick the wrong ones, and then whatever. So I just, you know, I mix it in here and there, so nobody accuses me of, like, only picking the seeds, but, when you get one right, and again, 10 over 7, not crazy, but for me, you know, when you get that one right, and that was me picking also, like, I think Colorado's going to beat Boise State, and then I think Colorado's going to beat Florida, so kind of picked 2 games there. Anyway, it feels good, so I was, you know, fist pumping in the car a little bit. Texas A&M beat Nebraska. I feel like there was a lot of buzz about Nebraska this year, because they shoot the ball a bunch. They have that one Asian dude, Asian Curry, or whatever he's called. And a lot of people just, like, want them to win because they hadn't won in the tournament ever in their history. No, Buzz Williams squad. I heard one interview of Buzz Williams on a competing podcast, and I was like, I'm I like that guy, where he's I'm picking his team, especially when the buzz is about the other team. You're just like, nah, probably not. By the way, I'm watching Kansas right now. The Kansas game is about to start. Between that, like, little bitch that I was talking about, Johnny Furphy, and, like, this other guard, his name is, like, Timberlake, like Justin Timberlake, but not. One of the uglier backcourts in probably the entire tournament. If you haven't, like, looked at that, I don't remember his first name, Timberlake guy, but he's very ugly as well. He's got, like, some lip thing and, like, the dustiest haircut of all time. Anyway. Where were we? Duke, Vermont. Thanks for coming out, Vermont. You didn't really have much of a tournament. That's about it. I mean, I have Duke going sneaky far. Feels uncomfortable. But, Alabama, like I said, took care of business. Charleston, nobody can guard anybody in this game. Alabama's obviously got a ton of offensive talent, but they haven't played defense literally all year. And Charleston hung 96 on them, but Alabama hung 109. These are pretty crazy scores for a college basketball game. But yeah, Alabama took care of business in the end. Longwood lost to Houston. But, you know, we talked about James Madison. Utah State beat TCU. I was happy to get this one right, too. I feel like a lot of people were shitting on the Mountain West, that they were underseeded or not deserving or whatever. Or that Utah State, like, won the conference and then otherwise wouldn't have been in, and so then they aren't that good. I don't know. It just felt right. I don't know why. I actually have no idea why, but it just felt right. Picked them. They won by 16. The St. Mary's Spiders. Actually, the St. Mary's Gale. St. Mary Gales. My favorite college basketball team other than the Canes. For no reason. Just I decided that in, like, high school. Now I'm a big fan. Actually, the reason was I picked them that year. Hunter Dickinson just walked. They didn't call it. I picked them, it was the year when they had Jock Landale, which he plays on the Suns now, but, like, nobody knows who he is, but he was sick in college. He's a really big guy, skilled big from Australia, and, they played, it was either the second round, I think it was the second round, right? They were a 7 seed, and Arizona was a 2 seed, and this was Lauri Markkanen in Arizona, and Alonzo Trier, and all this other stuff. So the guys, this is a pretty good team. And I had picked St. Mary's to beat Arizona because I watched them against Gonzaga in the WCC tournament. And I was like, I like this. This big guy's a problem. Kind of takes away what Arizona does best. And so I was like, all right, like, let's call my shot here. They ended up losing by, like, 7, but it was close until, like, the final minute. And I, you know, was cheering pretty hard for that one because that would have helped the bracket a lot, because guys like Loon Beast choose Arizona to win the title every year, and, you know, would have been fun to get their elimination right by picking a 7 over them, but just missed. Anyway, that's why I'm a St. Mary's fan for life. Go Gales. But they lost to this one in Grand Canyon. Shout out Goose Abby Nielsen, bitch. And that's all I have to say about that. I didn't watch the game. I was at a birthday party, but that was a tough one. In many battles between Goose Abby Nielsen and Loon Allen, intern Allen, she got this one. You know, we'll have another battle soon. Maybe. Hopefully not. Anyway, those were the games. Let's go briefly over the. I say briefly, but it's not gonna be that brief. Over the road to the final, Loon. Loon HQ bracket. I'm gonna get a little bit of water here. Currently in first place in Road to the Final Loon is intern Allen with All right, this is updating the game that Arizona just won. But I think everybody would have had that. So I think, anyway, I've 250 points at the moment. Picked 23 first round matchups correctly. I usually shoot for 23-24. I think I shoot for 24 knowing that some are going to miss, that everybody's going to miss, and it's okay. Like, nobody picked Yale over Auburn. Nobody's out here picking that. And if you did, you're just kind of stupid. Even if you got rewarded for it this year. So stuff like that I know is going to happen, but I want to get a lot of the 50-50s right. And by doing that, I feel like 24 is a good goal. If I get 23, that's okay. You don't want to pick. When you start getting to 22 out of 36, I'm no longer like, oh, this is really good. Even though, like, statistically compared to everybody else, it might be. But I'm just like, wow, that wasn't that sick. Anyway, 23 out of 32. I've been known to be a bit of a first round merchant when it comes to the bracket. One year I got all 16 of the first games of the first day correct. And then I had 18 in a row, and then Virginia lost to UMBC and they were my champions. So it didn't matter, but my first round was still sick. Anyway, I'll go over my strategy a little bit real quick, or just what I got cooking here. So I have, my champion is Purdue. I have Purdue over UConn in the final, and my final four is UConn, UNC, Kentucky, who's now eliminated, in Purdue. Sort of notable runs with BYU to the Elite Eight. Not the Elite Eight, the final, Sweet 16. I like Tennessee. I like Baylor. I have them going to the Elite Eight. I had St. Mary's in the Sweet 16. They're dead. Again, not a lot of upset to speak of. That's not really my thing. This year I did the bracket kind of different. I did it backwards. Because I feel like if you go matchup by matchup, the only matchups that you're actually getting are in the first round. So if I'm picking, right now, I have if I'm picking Iowa State over BYU in the Sweet 16, that's the game that I picked on my thing right now. That matchup will never happen. And so when you try to pick Sweet 16, Elite Eight games, Final Four games based on the matchups that you said were going to happen, those matchups almost never happen, and the reasons that you're picking those teams are reasons that won't actually exist in the real world. I don't know if that made sense. But this year I just looked at it. It's like, who is the team that I think is most likely to win the title? And the answer is UConn. Frankly, the answer is UConn. So why don't I pick them? Because everybody picks them. You get a massive advantage in Tournament Challenge by picking the team that wins the title. If you pick the one that everybody else picks, then if they win the title, you no longer have that advantage, because you're basically, in most of my pools right now, I'm competing against one other person that picked Purdue. And I picked Purdue because there's a narrative about them that they can't win in the tournament, that they lose early round games. And maybe they do. Maybe that will happen. But in this case, it doesn't, because they have the National Player of the Year and guards that are way more experienced and way better than they were last year. If they do win the title, then I'm competing against one other person per bracket, essentially, that also picked them, per group that also picked them. And if I would have picked UConn, even if they win, I'm competing against 5, 6, 7 other people that I have to get every game right compared to them to win. Anyway, so I go from there. What's the biggest advantage in terms of choosing my champion? I decided it was Purdue. I also trust UConn a lot, so I have them in the championship game. From there, you just pick to fill out the rest of the Final Four, pick the next teams you trust the most from each region, and then you go down from there, go backwards. Because, for example, if I'm picking UNC to beat Wagner, to beat Michigan State, to beat Alabama, to beat Arizona, whatever. Like, by the time you get two rounds in, those matchups are very likely not going to be the ones you're even picking anymore. And so maybe that UNC was a bad example. Say I think I trust Baylor a lot. And it's like, okay, wow. I really think that Baylor matches up well against Arizona. Or maybe I think that North Carolina is going to lose to Michigan State, and that's why I think Baylor's going to go through. Like, no. Because realistically, when you're picking the matchups the next two, three rounds, those matchups aren't even going to exist in the real world. So you just choose the teams that you think are most likely to win the whole thing, and then you kind of go backwards from there, filling them in. Like, if I don't know if this makes any sense, and maybe nobody cares. If I were to make a list of the teams that I trust the most to win the national title, you just take it from that list and then fill it in the bracket that way instead of going matchup by matchup. Anyway, that's all that is. Nobody cares. Anyway, I'm in first place. But I am a first-round merchant, notoriously, so that will probably go eventually. My max points possible right now at this point. The big real hit for this was Kentucky losing. Excuse me. A bit of a other hit with BYU losing. By the way, I don't like upsets because they're not likely to happen. And even if you get the one, even if you pick an upset, you're probably never going to pick the right one, even if they do happen. And so that's why I kind of stay away. So tournaments that go kind of boring are perfect for me. Anyway, Loon Mags Locks is in second place. He has 240 points, 22 out of 32 the first round. I'm dying of speaking, I guess. I don't know. It seems to always happen when I podcast. I don't know why. Just a lot of talking. He's got UConn winning the title. In this case, in this group, and now this group, the Loon group isn't for money, but the Loon and other Goose groups are for money, so those are the ones that maybe I care about this one most. In road to the final, Loon Meg's the only one that picked UConn, and so if they win, he's winning, and so shout out to him for that, I guess. But he does have Kentucky in the final four. They've lost Tennessee in the final four. Arizona and Connecticut filling out the final four. He's got Auburn in the Elite Eight, in the Sweet 16, which I didn't have, and that's a big difference in our bracket right now. He had Vermont beating Duke and then beating JMU. Oh my God, I cannot speak. I'm literally dying. Oh, God. I might lose my voice. I think it's because I'm trying to talk quietly because I'm in a library. So I'm just going to start shouting. Anyway, I am just shouting now. Correctly picked NC State. Also fell for Drake like I did. Bum. Also fell for New Mexico like I did. Correctly picked. Oh, a lot of correct picks here. Like I said, you did pretty well. Did not pick Oregon. So those are some of the sort of 50-50 swing games that made a difference where he's at and where we're at. Loon Beast with 220 points in the first round. 22 out of 32, correct. The problem here is like Auburn in the final four and
he's almost completely dead in this one region because he's got Auburn beat in the East region. He's got Auburn beating UConn in the Sweet 16 to go to the Elite Eight, and then he's got Auburn beating BYU, who he had beating Drake, and none of those teams even won. So he's got he's got BYU beating Duquesne and then beating Illinois, who Illinois did win. And then he had Drake beating Washington State and then beating Iowa State, and they didn't win. So he's a little bit fucked in the East region, and that's going to be a huge reason why his points possible are not that high. But he's doing better than Slim Loon. I'll give you that little preview. Slim Loon is notoriously really bad at picking brackets, I think we can say. Likes Clemson to the Sweet 16. That could still happen. Likes Oregon there, too. He's too many upsets for me, but we'll see if they happen. Doing all right so far. Obviously, that one region is going to be tough for my guy. But Slim Loon picked 21 games correctly, which isn't that horrible, but he's essentially dead. Both Auburn and Kentucky in the Final Four. And Kentucky winning the title, so he's dead. I mean, I feel like this happens every year to Slim Loon, mostly because he always picks Kentucky, but first two rounds kind of just kill him. Even if he picked a number of games right, just the teams that he invested in are teams that lost. So it is what it is. Yeah. I mean, not much more to say other than that. He also... You know, I just – the Auburn over UConn, I just feel like we're getting cute. Maybe we'll – you know, they already lost, obviously, so that's not happening. But, yeah. We got – speaking of getting cute, we have Loon Mush, who has Creighton winning the title. And I'm not saying that Creighton won't win the title. They very well might. And if they do, he's winning every bracket that he's in probably that has Creighton winning the title. But I just – for me, even though that narrative is possible and the chance is there, I just don't see it as likely enough to like bet my entire bracket on them. Stayed sensible otherwise. He has Kentucky in the Final Four, just like all of us seem to do. So he's it's a bit screwed there, but many of us were. But Connecticut in the Final Four and UNC as well. Those are his 2-1 seeds in the Final Four. Other than that, pretty also liked St. Mary's to win a couple games. They didn't. Liked University of New Mexico to win a few games, which they didn't. Yeah. As I said, Loon Mush is in a perfect position if Creighton wins the title. Otherwise, nah. And by the way, not a great first round from Loon Mush. But better than Jake. Jake got, was it, how many? Wait, hold up. He got 17 out of 32 correct. That's just like, it's just really not good. It's just not good. Am I going to have to... I said his actual name a couple times. Is he gonna come at me? I meant Loon Schmidt. Is he gonna come at me? I don't know. Apologies, Loon Schmidt. Didn't mean to. I don't want to edit this. Don't have time. 17 out of 32. It's just not like getting just over 50%. It's just not good. Had FAU wrong, or had Northwestern wrong, I guess. Had UAB wrong, or had San Diego State getting it wrong, picked UAB. Duquesne BYU wrong, Washington State Drake wrong, Michigan State, Mississippi State wrong, Clemson, New Mexico wrong, Dayton, Nevada wrong, Texas, Colorado State wrong, Utah State, TCU wrong. To be fair, a lot of these games are like kind of pick-ems, or they're like kind of 50-50 either way, which way they go, but... he just picked the wrong ones, which, like, it'd be one thing if he did some dumb shit, like picking Morehead State or something, but they just kind of guessed wrong on a lot of them. So, tough day for Loon Schmidt. Like I said, overall, Inter now in first place. Right now, 250 points because we all got Arizona. So in the second round, so we got 20 points for that. Intern Allen with 250, Loon Megs with 240, Bracket Beast, Loon Beast with 240, Slim Loon with 210, but he's basically dead. Loon Mush with, by the way, not a good first round from Loon Mush either. So, sorry, Loon Schmidt, for only attacking you. Loon Schmidt with 200 points, but he's got a decent amount remaining to get. Loon Schmidt, 190 right now, not looking great. In terms of the max points possible, I am still leading. I have 1650 possible. Loon Beast has 1580 and Loon Mush has 1540 possible. Slim Loon is at 10-10 right now. All right, so we'll see what happens. I'll update after – I probably won't update. Well, I guess the middle week would be an update after round two. That's enough college basketball. Holy shit, I've been talking about college basketball for 56 minutes. We're going to buzz through the other information we got here. Spot is too long. My apologies. Wolves are 3-1 since the last pod. Killed the Jazz twice, 119-110. Ant with 30. The first game was 119-110. Second one was 114-104. The game at home, which was the first one, Ant with 31 and 10 rebounds. Conley with 25. He's been scoring a lot recently. Naz Reid started. Obviously, Kat and Rudy were out. Kat's still out. Rudy's back now, but was out for this game. Naz at 25 and 12. In the start, Luka Garza played a lot of minutes compared to usual. We ran out of bigs. Had 9 points. Wrote that the team is suddenly very small, which I guess, you know, it is definitely, you know, when you're trying to give big minutes, big as in the position, big minutes to Luka Garza, then, you know, the team's pretty small and we're struggling in the big department. But Ant has been scoring like crazy. Mike Conley's been scoring a lot. Alexander Walker's actually put in quite a few good performances scoring the ball recently, so kind of filling it in from the perimeter instead. But beat Utah at home and had 32-8-7. Kyle Anderson, starting as a power forward, had plus 20 in the plus minus. Didn't have a ton of points, but played some good minutes, obviously. Utah's a pretty bad team, but they're 20-15 at home, and so to go in and home undermanned and beat them is, you know, it's good to see. It doesn't necessarily mean anything, obviously. Made this note as of then, or I think this was after the Denver game. It was not including the most recent Cavs game, but Ant is averaging 31-7-5 since Cat injury. That's like about 5 points and like three rebounds up from what he was averaging before that, or what he was or like his season averages, something like that. So obviously sort of taking it upon himself to make this shit work, especially like obviously scoring numbers are going to go up without Cat. So, and it's going to be less efficient, but he's definitely carrying the load. He's really been contributing in the rebound department. I've noticed it the last few games, more than he had in the past. And that's, you know, definitely a, we don't have any bigs type of thing to do. Close loss to Denver, 115-112, and had a three to tie that hit front iron. Without Kat and Rudy, nearly beat one of the best teams in the West, who was, you know, full strength in that game. Jokic killed us. But just kind of let Jokic score, and Jokic is almost less dangerous when he's scoring than when he's passing. And the perimeter still all the really good perimeter defenders that are on this team. Obviously McDaniels, but Ant's part of that too. Alexander Walker's part of that. Monte Morris is a pretty good defender for his size. they're all still playing really well, and there weren't a lot of points or weren't a lot of big nights from guys outside of Jokic on Denver. They still beat us, but a really good fight. And one shot goes in, and all of a sudden we're going to overtime. Severely undermanned, you know. It's one thing to lose Cat. It's another thing to lose Gobert. So Jokic can shoot, pretty much get whatever he wanted down low. Just like me playing Lynn Meggs, get whatever I want. 26 for McDaniels, banging threes. 4 of 6 from three. If he does that, it helps a lot. I'll tell you that. If we can get good offensive nights out of him, is a pretty big lift to the squad. Beat the Cavs just last night, or was it 2 nights ago? I don't remember. 104-91. Big defensive performance. Obviously, Rudy's back. That helps. The Cavs are undermanned right now with Donovan Mitchell out. And a lot of their second and third options are bigs, which Rudy kind of erases. and with 16 and 13 boards, it's a really weird stat line for him. It's a Rudy Gobert stat line if I've ever seen one. But Conley with 21 and Naz Reid had 18. So, again, some of the other sort of secondary third options really filling in, which is nice to see. One real quick storyline that I've noticed in the past sort of week or two since Cat left is that the sort of fourth quarter collapses don't happen anymore. That's mostly because we don't have big leads anymore because the team isn't that working as efficiently. But there's something to be said for a team that knows that they have to bring it every night to win, that then like doesn't suffer with the problems that come when you don't give 100% effort every night. And that's sort of what we're seeing right now is like for a team that blew a lot of fourth quarter leads and a lot of second halves just didn't really go well. Each of the wins this week and even the Denver loss, the Wolves were significantly better in the second half than the other team was. Another just kind of dominating performance last night against the Cavs in the second half, and the game was pretty much, I think, tied at halftime or pretty close to it. And they just kind of dominated the rest of the way and ended up with a pretty comfortable win. It's interesting how, like, I you know, sort of been saying all this time, and it's not a big surprise that when you blow second half leads, that it's because you're not trying very hard, or that you just let up a little bit of the intensity. And it's interesting that losing one of your best players then makes that intensity ratchet up that much more. We'll see how sustainable it is as we get into like sort of the really dragged out sort of dog days portions of this season. But I was expecting a little bit more of a fall off, to be honest, in terms of how this team is, how many wins they're getting. We're still right up there with the one seed. Let me actually check the standings after last night. I think we're a game back or so. we're a game and a half back of OKC. So we're still right in there in a pretty good distance from the Clippers at the four seed, who have fallen off quite a bit. But yeah, honestly, pretty encouraging stuff from the Wolves for the past 2 weeks. Not what we could say about the Twins. Couple not great injuries to the pitching staff. Anthony DeSclafani has a forearm strain, which is like kind of baseball language for he's probably going to get Tommy John soon. So we'll see. I guess it's not for sure. But you know how like when somebody gets like a knee sprain on a non-contact football injury, you're like, all right, ACL. It's like that type of vibe, I feel like. Anthony DeSclafani was not going to be a, you know, major part of this team. He's going to be a depth piece, maybe a sixth rotation guy, bounce back and forth between AAA and the Twins. But still not good to lose player. Caleb Thielbar, similar thing, not nearly as bad, but has a hamstring thing. He's had a hamstring things for a while. He's also like low-key very old at this point. And I don't know, the last few years I've just been like, the fewer Caleb Thielbar innings we can sort of have is okay with me. Last year was, at one point we had like only two relievers that we could trust. And so him coming back from, I think it was another hamstring injury at the time, was like, all right, cool. Now we have three, maybe. But I still don't super trust Caleb Thielbar ever. So I don't know. Like, a lot of, like, Twins people are, like, think the sky is falling with this type of shit. But it's just it's Caleb Thielbar. Like, let's not be crazy. The last one is pretty sizable if it becomes a real concern. Jawan Duran has an oblique issue, a strain, I believe. That's not good, and it will at least sideline him for some of the beginning of the season. If he makes a full recovery, I think we're good. You know, it's going to be okay. Baseball is a very, very, very long season, and we can give Griffin Jacks a couple save opportunities or super high leverage. You know, just bump him up to, like, the number one leverage spot in the bullpen, and I think we're okay. Yeah, I don't know. Like, you don't want to see Duran hurt, but, like, if he comes back the middle of April, beginning of May, like, we're not – it's not going to make or break the Twins season, you know. You just want him to come back fully so it's not a lingering issue throughout the entire year. By the way, for the Vikings, it seems like we're – like the national sort of vibe around the Vikings that everybody thinks is that, like, we're coming for that four spot or that five spot in the draft, and we're going to pick J.J. McCarthy, which, again, I've said many times, I do not want to have happen. I do not think we should trade up to get a guy that doesn't do anything in college, but it seems like that might be what happens. With this front office, there's often been just like a little bit of surprises in terms of what we expect to happen isn't exactly happen how we thought it was going to happen. And so maybe that happens here. I'm hopeful. I don't know. I think there's a chance. Like, some people have been talking about getting into the top three. If we got the top three somehow, almost regardless of what we're giving up, I think I'd be happy about it because not regardless of what we give up, but if it's reasonable, or, like, even if we're overpaying a little bit, I'm okay with it because I think that there's three quarterbacks in this draft and they all have a chance to be really good. But if you don't pick in the top three, you're not getting any of them. The problem with that is I don't see any reason why we're certainly not getting number one. So I don't see any reason why the Commanders, the Patriots, would move out of the second and third spots. I just don't see it. Unless for some reason they're dumb enough to believe that J.J. McCarthy is better than who they're going to get and they want to move back to, like, five, but there's no way that they would have to get five from the Chargers somehow. Is that who has five? I know it's somebody that doesn't need a quarterback. 2024 NFL draft. Draft order. I think it's Chargers, right? I would love, like I said, I would love for that scenario to happen. It is the Chargers where we get, you know, a Jaden Daniels or a Drake May, but I just don't see a world in which it does. Like, why would they trade us that pick unless we're giving up JJ or something? Like, and this is Justin Jefferson I'm talking about, which we won't. We can't do that. So if that were to happen, then I would not like it. I just feel like I'm going to be watching J.J. McCarthy as a Viking next year, and I really don't want to do that. I just don't think he's good. I just don't think there's any reason for him to be thought of the way he's thought of. And I don't want the Vikings to be the one that falls for that trap, I guess. But it seems like that's the way it's going. A lot of people are saying that's what's going to happen. Sort of been hinting at it or thinking that trade up, because now we have 11 and I believe 24, 23, I guess it is 23, which, like, trade up to get 23, like I said, I think I said in the last spot, if that turns into Bo Nix or Michael Penis, I'm in, I'm all for it, because we can get a top 10 talent in the draft at the corner position with our 11th pick.
I want that. That is what I want. But it's just been hearing a lot that we're moving up to four. So, or five, I guess it would be. Because four is probably Marvin Harrison to the Cardinals, because they're going to stick with Kyler, it seems. Anyway. I don't have a post game. This pod has been long enough. Apologies for the no post game. I can't think of one. Basketball emoji. Peace.